Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, one and all, to Trisha's True Crime Radio. It is going to be a great show tonight. This is a radio show that has great taste. We're very fattening, and at times we can be unhealthy, but at least we have fun and we're informative. Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by Canines with a Cause. This is a nonprofit organization with the mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. Check out their website at caninswithacause.com. Question: who goes from seemingly normal female behavior to psycho turbo bitch in less than 60 seconds? A lot of women, unfortunately. Now, don't get me wrong. Men are just as bad. There are guys that can go from normal nice guy to total turbo bastard in less than 60 seconds as well. They're both out there, men and women. But when a woman seems normal and then reveals herself to be scary, dangerous, crazy, there is something almost spellbinding about it, which is why we all watched Casey Anthony and why we are all watching Jody, mark my words, no jury will convict me, Arias. Mark my words, no jury will convict me. Let's look at the bare facts here. Jody Arias lied continually to the cops, finally fessed up to killing, actually butchering Travis Alexander in a horrid, brutal fashion, and yet she still claims she's innocent. How can she do this? Well, it's part of being the turbo psycho type 1 personality, in my opinion. It's right up there with being a borderline personality, but worse. Now, this happened a while ago, June 9, 2008. Travis Alexander's roommates and friends discovered his body. He had been stabbed more than 24 times. His throat was slit from ear to ear. And just to make sure, he'd been shot in the head. Like I said, brutal. Alexander's friends told investigators right off the bat they believed Jody Arias had done it. Who is Jody Arias? Is she an abused woman who had to kill an over-controlling, sexually sick man to save her own life? Or is Jody Arias a sick, twisted sister who was so jealous she felt she had the right to butcher a nice guy who just didn't want to have anything else to do with the turbo psycho type 1 personality? So, oh, by the way, if you're looking for sex, we've got all kinds of sex. I mean, the sex in this court case is unbelievable. There is more sex going on in this case than at a co-ed sleepover at the Kardashians' house. That's how bad it is. And someone who has had a front row seat to this whole drama is one of our absolute favorite true crime reporters, Beth Karras from CNN. Beth, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio and to our many Web Sleuths members that are listening. How are you? Beth? Are you there, Beth? Uh-oh. She was there just moments ago. Beth? Kim, sir? Is Beth still there?
She looks like she's there to me.
Yeah, she does. Beth, are you there? We were just talking with her. You know what? I'll tell you what. Why don't you go ahead and let's hang up this... Oh, is that Beth? Somebody's calling us now. Oh, no. Why does this always happen? Kim?
Hello? Hello?
Kim?
Hello?
Who's this?
Yeah, this is Beth. As I heard you welcome me, and I said hello, and it went dead.
Oh, my gosh, that is so weird. This is very bizarre. You know, when you mention Jody Arias' name, like the ground starts to shake and flames from hell come up, I think is the problem. Well, that was just weird. Okay, Beth, we're going to get – the weirdness is over. You know, if we get it over with in the beginning, we don't have to worry about the weirdness later on. Anyway, Beth Karras, CNN, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
We're going to get into a little bit of the background and all of that. But first, I want to ask you a quick question because this is kind of on everybody's mind. There was a closed hearing, and there's been reports out about this closed hearing. What are those reports saying?
Well, the judge ended up unsealing the transcript in that hearing, which I have not seen yet. I'm supposed to get my hands on it shortly. But I've read the reports that of people who have read the transcript, and the judge is allowing into evidence what the prosecution tried to prevent, and that's why she unsealed the transcript. Apparently, Jodi Arias is going to testify that about 6 months before she killed Travis Alexander, she caught him at his house masturbating to pictures of small boys or adolescent boys or something like that. I don't know the details of the age, but it's clearly pedophilia is what she's saying. And that prompted two subsequent acts of violence. These are the reports that I've read. Two subsequent acts of violence against her because she now had a dirty little secret of his. And that's why she feared for her life that day in the shower, in the bathroom. Now, that's in broad strokes what the judge is going to allow. And she apparently has said two different things, that he was masturbating to images on his computer and that he was masturbating to images that were like printed photos laid out in front of him. So she said two different versions of that, which is already problematic. But we do know from the testimony at the trial thus far that the police found no pornographic websites accessed by Travis Alexander, nor did they find any pornography on his computer, you know, child pornography. I don't think they found any adult pornography of women either. But so to the extent that her story is that he was masturbating to images on his computer, that's been refuted by the evidence already. So maybe she'll say it's photographs that were in front of him. They did not find them in the search, by the way, of his house, is my understanding.
Right. And you have a law background. You are a prosecutor, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Why would a judge allow this? This is so inflammatory and so ridiculous. Why would the judge allow it?
Well, because it can't. She'll be cross-examined on it. I mean, that is her story. I mean, I think that the prosecution probably wanted to preclude it because they thought that they had refuted the evidence. They thought that it wasn't on Travis Alexander's computer, so she shouldn't be able to say it's a lie. But now that she's saying, oh, no, there were actually photos in front of him, well, you know, you can't just stop her from saying these things. I mean, she has a right to get up there and say these things, and you just got to challenge her credibility and cross-examine her about it. And the judge said, look, you can cross-examine her. You can deal with inconsistencies and absurdities or whatever, but she has a right to say it. So the judge is permitting it.
And here's the thing, too, that what somebody pointed out in our chat room, Steely Dan, you know, she could ask, or she could be asked, why didn't she call the police? Why did she go back if she saw this, if she was in fear for her life? There are just so many holes in her story that it's absolutely positively ridiculous. But I want to backtrack just a little bit because we do have listeners who probably are not as familiar with this trial as you and I and our other listeners are. So just take us in the really briefest Reader's Digest form, the relationship of Jodi and Travis. How did they meet? What happened? Did they break up? And how do we end up here?
They met at a convention in Las Vegas in early September 2006. She was living in Southern California. He was living in a Phoenix suburb, Mesa, Arizona. And he worked for this company called Prepaid Legal. They sell like kind of like legal insurance. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, they don't call it a pyramid, you know, scheme. Those are illegal, but it's kind of like that. You know, the more you sell, you get a cut of everybody who's underneath you. So she was learning the ropes. She met him there. And she was living with a man already, a boyfriend of 4 years. They had been living together a couple of years at that time, but the relationship was on the skids. Within 1 week, she is meeting up, hooking up with Travis Alexander for a sexual liaison in California, between California and Arizona. And then she tells her boyfriend of 4 years, things are changing, no more premarital sex, I'm exploring Mormonism, because Travis Alexander was a Mormon. Mm-hmm. And within 2 months of meeting him, she has been baptized as a Mormon by Travis Alexander, and they have had a number of sexual liaisons. They have met at various places, motels, whatever, and it's sex. And then they actually become boyfriend-girlfriend, she says, from February 2007 through June of 2007. Then she finds out he's actually, you know, playing around and interested in other women, because he's never going to marry Jodi, because Mormons aren't supposed to have premarital sex. They
right.
break up. When they break up, she moves to Mesa. She moves there, and it freaks him out. And then for the next year, they continue to have sex. but he's going out with other people, and she starts stalking him the end of December, slashing his tires, but she's never charged with it. She's never charged with it. And just showing up at his house and sending nasty emails to at least one of his girlfriends. At least they believe it was Jody. She did it anonymously. And finally, he says, you know, this has to end. And she moves back to California in early April 2008. And he's got other girlfriends now. He's looking to get married. He's 30 years old. 2 months after she moved away, she killed him. The state says she was obsessed with him. It was jealousy, rage. He was dating other people. He was going to go to Cancun with another woman, and she was not going to have anything of it. If she couldn't have him, nobody could. But she says, you know, they never really stopped seeing each other. They had phone sex about a month before she killed him. That recording is going to be played this week in court. And she went to Utah to see a new man in her life, and she detoured from California to Arizona before going to Utah to see Travis, and she had one last sexual liaison with him. And she says he got angry with her because she dropped his camera taking pictures of him while he was in the shower, and he lunged at her, and so she attacked him to prevent her own death. But she attacked him with a knife and a gun, and she killed him within 2 minutes.
Just happened to have with her. I mean, her story has changed. First, she wasn't even in the state. Then she was there. And then when it finally was obvious that that she's the one who killed him because her own camera took the picture of his dead and brutalized body in the shower, then she changed her story to this, well, he attacked me. There would be no reason for her to lie in the first place, but, you know, unless she was trying to cover her tracks, which is exactly, in my opinion, what she was trying to do. Now, when you say this phone call is going to be played in court, obviously, she taped it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Oh, dear. And because this will be so shocking, I'm sure, to his family, to Travis's family, being LDS, LDS men do not do this. It's just, do not behave this way. So I'm sure it's going to be very, very shocking to his family, and I'm sorry that they have to go through this. Let's ask a few questions here. I've got so many questions. We're talking with Beth Karas from CNN about the Jody Arias trial. She will be back on the stand tomorrow, and it is just going to be just one hot place in that courtroom, let me tell you. Okay, Steely Dan wants to know, why does she think, meaning you, Beth, why do you think Travis kept letting Jody stay in his life even after she went psycho, like slashing his tires and such? Did he let her stay in his life, or was she just forcing herself? Excuse me.
You know, that's a good question because, well, there's several questions. We don't know if she was forcing herself all the time. Probably not. Travis Alexander apparently would succumb to temptation. I mean, he loved his sex, and he wasn't supposed to have it. He was conflicted. One of his friends told me that he had confessed to a bishop. He was trying to rehabilitate himself. He really was trying to follow the tenets of his religion and not do this anymore. But, you know, he and Jody were very compatible sexually. So, you know, I think they just couldn't stay away from each other. There's no question that she liked him very, very much and didn't want him dating other people. But she was never charged with any of the stalking behavior. And one of his friends, who's not a witness in the case, told me that he actually said to Travis a few weeks before Travis was killed, "Aren't you a little afraid of her that she might hurt you?" And Travis said something to the effect of, "No, she's not going to hurt me. It's okay." He really did not think she would ever hurt him physically. So it had to have come as a surprise to him, if you believe the state's theory, that she got him in this vulnerable position, naked in the shower. She's taking pictures of him, tasteful pictures from the waist up, because we saw all of them, and then probably said, "Why don't you crouch down, I'll get a few pictures of you seated." Once she had him seated, she could level the playing field, because he was stronger than she was. So now he's naked, he's wet, he's slippery, and she has two weapons on her. And so she stabs him in the heart. He clearly grabbed the knife because he had deep wounds on his hand, consistent with having grabbed the blade. So he grabs it. The wound to the heart was not immediately fatal. So there's the blood told a story throughout the master bathroom, the way it spatter and the position. And it sometimes it's drip, sometimes it spatter, sometimes it's smear. And he stood over one of the two sinks across from the shower, and he dripped and he spits. blood, and then he was stabbed 9 times in the back. And then he stumbles down the hall into the toward the master bedroom. He probably collapsed at the threshold of the master bedroom after smearing blood on the wall along the way from his bloody back, and he's probably on his hands and knees, and that's when she did the coup de grace, which was the slice right across his throat, ear to ear, deep, 3.5 to 4 inches deep, severed his airway, went all the way back to his spine. And then there's a big pile, I mean, intense blood at the threshold, a big, you know, big red puddle. And then a lot of lighter blood. Looks like she may have been turning his body over and around, because she pulls him, this is the state's theory, back to the bathroom down a 12-foot hallway, back into the shower stall separate from the tub, and then puts him in there and washes his body off of blood, and then leaves him in there. He's found 5 days later. Now, the accidental photo that is the critical photo in the case was taken with her foot in the foreground, and his neck is already slashed, and you can sort of see his head and the blood coming down his right shoulder and his back, and you see his foot in the distance. He's clearly on his back. He's probably dead by then, and they believe that she shot him in the head. You know, just I'm not sure why, if he was if she thought he was still alive, but she shot him at the end before putting him in the shower. So she takes these pictures, and then 2 minutes after the last picture, which is him crouching in the shower, he's dead with his throat slashed. That accidental photo, the camera fell, and it was an upside-down picture. Mm-hmm. And she deletes all the pictures, and probably in her haste to clean up, she throws some of his clothes, towels, a little bleach, and a camera in the washing machine, and starts the washer and probably left. His bedding was in the dryer when he's found 5 days later. His roommates had done wash just before he was killed. They had done their wash. He's killed on a Wednesday, like Monday or Tuesday, so no one had gone to the washer for 5 days. The dryer had his bedding, and it was probably is the case that Travis actually washed his own bedding after he had sex with her that afternoon before she killed him, and they took pictures of each other, and he probably washed his bedding immediately, and she probably threw it in the dryer and then threw the towel and the camera in the dryer. So the police found the camera. The camera's destroyed. It'd been through the washer. It's a $1,500 digital camera he had just bought. But the memory card they took out, and they had a software program that restored these deleted photos.
Wow.
And when he was found on June 9th, they didn't know how long he had been dead, when he died, they knew how he died, but they didn't know when and the time, the date. And this camera with a date and time stamp gave them the last moment he was alive, like 5:30 p.m. on June 4th, 5:32, he's dead with that accidental photo. So now, and they saw couple hours earlier the naked photos of her and him, so they knew she was there and they knew exactly when he died.
That is just amazing. It's like that camera, it's like he's speaking from the grave. You know, he wasn't about to let her get away with it, and that camera somehow survived. And thank goodness they did have that software program so they could retrieve those photos. We're talking with Beth Karras. She has a front and center row seat to the Jodi Arias trial. It is a salacious. It is just everything thrown in here. You have a crazy woman. You have her coming and slitting a guy's throat and stabbing him and shooting him and then claiming self-defense. That's what's so shocking. I want to ask you about Jodi Arias. Has she done any of this type of stalking behavior before Travis? Did she have boyfriends that she annoyed or harassed before Travis?
Well, certainly nothing like this. She has, in her testimony, admitted to looking at the Hotmail account of a boyfriend from, you know, years ago. Okay, and she is supposedly hacked into Travis Alexander's Facebook and looked at his email and on his phone, looked at his text messages. So she did that with the Hotmail of one boyfriend and MySpace of another one. So she has this history, which is sort of like cyber stalking history, of looking at their private stuff. And one boyfriend who she found out was cheating on her, she went and confronted the woman he was cheating on her with. She got in her car and drove, you know, so many miles to meet this woman at a resort where they used to work. So she also has that, you know, that somewhat, that's not unusual. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is consistent with her, you know, some of her behavior with Travis Alexander, but nothing violent like this that
right.
I've been made aware of.
Well, you could see that type of behavior escalating, especially if she was, you know, so infatuated and enthralled with Travis and the thought of losing him, she just couldn't take it. We're talking with Beth Karras from CNN about the Jody Arias trial going on right now. We have so many questions. I need to get some to you right now. Let's see. This is from Lulu. Beth, what was the proxy website about when the IT guy testified? I'm not sure I know about the proxy website. What do you know about that?
Well, what happened was this witness talked about the computer activity on Travis Alexander's laptop on the day he died, but the early morning hours from about 4:08 to 4:35 a.m. It is during that time that Jody Arias arrived. So presumably Travis Alexander, he knew she was coming, and he was waiting up for her. And that's what she hasn't got to that point in her testimony, but that's what she has said in statements and her lawyer said in opening. So various sites he accessed included some music videos, his emails, and a web proxy. So, they didn't go beyond that. They just know that this web proxy is a site where you can, for various reasons, you just go through a proxy and it can hide whatever you're looking at.
Yes.
But it didn't go further. I mean, the testimony didn't go further, but there was that testimony.
Okay. And I'm just going to kind of plow through some of these questions here, or I will be chased out of town like Frankenstein's monster if I don't get to these questions. Let's see here. What do you think, Beth, of the defense strategy, their preparation, and their tactics? As a former prosecutor, give us your thoughts.
Well, I think the defense is doing what they have to do. If Jody Arias never spoke to the police, never made phone calls before she was arrested, didn't talk the day she was arrested or the day after and give all these various versions, she would not be in the same position, right? We wouldn't be calling her a liar. We'd be hearing her story for the first time on the stand. So the defense was stuck with all her stories that she told, and they're doing what they can with this evidence. It's a tough case, I think, for the defense, but she's got a defense, even if many people don't believe it. I think there are some who do.
Mm-hmm. And you know, as in the Casey Anthony case, we should leave every door open, every possibility open. I hope and pray that this jury has some common sense and will see through this obvious charade of a stalker, very dangerous woman, but you never know. Beth Karras from CNN is on our radio show tonight. I'm so delighted she's here with us. Another question, have you seen the photos comparing Brewer's hands to the hands in the penile photo?
Oh, you know, you cut out a little bit in the beginning. You're talking about the hands and the there's a photo of an erect penis, and there's some fingers in the photo.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Here's the question. I'm not sure. I'm hoping you know what this is. Have you seen the photos comparing Brewer's hands to the hands in the penile photo?
Oh, well, I've seen Brewer, and I know that we had shot, you know, his hands. Our
mm-hmm.
camera got his hands because we couldn't show his face, but I haven't done a comparison. Is there anyone who thinks that those are the same? The fingers and his, I think it would be a hard comparison to make, don't you?
Yeah, probably. It probably would be very hard. And I wouldn't.
I'll take a look.
Okay.
I'll take a look.
That's a good idea. Okay. Now, question. How is Jody's family reacting in the courtroom? Are you watching them? What are they doing?
Well, her mother and her mother's sister, who's a twin, are there every day and pretty stoic. I mean, when Jody was talking about abuse at the hands of her mother, hitting her with a wooden spoon many times as a child, her mother just sat there pretty stoically, but her mother's sister, Jody's aunt, you know, put her hand on her mother, you know, to comfort her. Jody has had some friends there as well. We don't know if, I think her sister was here one day. She has three siblings, but they're not all here every day. The only constants are her mother and her aunt. And, you know, her mom's holding up, although some people tell me they've seen her mother crying, you know, outside of court, but I don't see her crying in court. It's going to be very, very hard for them.
Do you believe Jody's story of abuse at the hands of her mother?
Well, you know, I don't really want to give my opinion, but I can just tell you that many people around the courthouse told me that what they heard about her mother doing to Jody isn't any different from what they experienced as children. I mean, some people thought that they would hear about more severe abuse, but whatever she did experience, maybe that was, you know, severe to Jody. I don't know how it'll sit with the jury, but I can't really give my opinion.
Oh, that's okay. Just give other people's opinions. That's fine. We'll accept that. Coming from you, that's what we want to hear, is what other people are thinking, because we know you can't give an opinion. That's why you need to write a book and let us know what you really think. Give us a deep down, dirty, you know, the whole story of what you really think. Have you thought about writing any books?
I have. Right. I have. Yes. I've been working on some proposals. Absolutely.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Well, believe me, it'll be a bestseller, I promise you. Just on Web Sleuth alone, you'll be a bestseller. Just go right up that bestsellers list, no question. Okay, more questions. We're talking with Beth Karras from CNN and about the Jody Arias trial continuing tomorrow. Well, we talked about Jody's family. Let's talk about Travis's family. What can you tell us about them and their behavior in the courtroom?
Well, Travis has a lot of siblings. He has four sisters and three brothers. Two of his sisters and one brother have been in court a lot. I mean, two sisters almost every day, and one brother, Stephen, has been here for most of the past few weeks. But he has a sister, Samantha. She looks just like Travis. She's in court. She's a police officer in Southern California. And then his sister, Tanisha, and her husband. Tanisha's here every single day with her husband. Okay, they are very upset. They have cried and walked out of court at times, especially when Juan Martinez had a photo of Travis Alexander and his throat, you know, the gaping wound in his throat out to show one of the defense witnesses, and it was a shock to everybody. He put it up on the monitor, and it was on the big screens in front of everybody, and it was a shock to Travis's sisters, who hadn't seen that. I mean, it's this gaping wound in his throat. It was very sad. So anyway, they had to walk out of court at that point, but they're trying to be strong. I don't know if other siblings will come, but at least he's got three here every day for the past 2 weeks. His parents are no longer alive. His father died in a tragic motorcycle accident on Travis's birthday in 1997. Uh-huh. His mother passed away in 2005.
That is so tragic. From the chat room, from Minor Fourth, have you ever seen, Beth Karras, this level of violence before from a female? I mean, yeah, I think we've seen it in gang members and you know, kind of females that you might expect it, but something like this is pretty brutal. Have you ever seen anything like this?
I don't know that I've ever seen this from a woman. I have to think about that. Of course, you know, I was at Andrea Yates's trial. She's very, very sick. And, I mean, I saw, you know, the pictures of, the, you know, the five children she mm-hmm. drowned. And she was too weak to lift the fifth child out of the water. And so there he was floating face down in the water. And it was just all, you know, feces and urine in the water because she had drowned four others in that same water, and it was just an awful, awful scene. But that's not violence like this, and she was mm-hmm. severely mentally ill. It's violent, but it's not, you know, bloody like this. I can't recall anything offhand like this. I can't either.
It's so shocking. Another question, in your opinion, Beth Karras, your opinion of the judge in terms of her rulings thus far, her command and control of the courtroom, and the way she interacts with the jury. Do you see anything problematic or questionable in her rulings?
I think that Judge Sherry Stevens is terrific. She has great judicial temperament. She has a command of the courtroom. She doesn't inject herself into the case. At least in front of everyone. I mean, I don't know what she's saying at sidebar and in chambers conferences, but she I think she's a good judge, quite frankly.
That's good. That's hopeful. Anyway, that gives us hope. What about the jury? how do you think they're reacting? Is Jody's looking at the jury when she's talking, right? How do you think they're reacting? Based on your years as a prosecutor and your experience, what would you say?
Well, you know, it's a huge courtroom, and I don't have as good a view of the jury as I do in a smaller courtroom. But there are 11 men and 7 women on the jury, so they sit in 2 rows of 9. And they're, you know, turned slightly in their chairs, swivel chairs to the left, you know, to face Jody. They are paying very close attention. They are allowed to take notes. Some of them do take notes. I noticed 2 women and 2 men in the front row seem to take notes quite a bit. Not everyone does. I can't see everyone in the back row. Now, I have not seen facial expressions. I can't see that. I haven't noticed them giving, you know, doing anything to Jody. But one person told me that a guy in the back row seemed to be getting sleepy on one of the 3 days Jody was on the stand. And another person said she saw 2 women in the front row smile at her, but that could be, you know, others said they didn't see that, but a smile could be a smirk, like, or it could be a genuine smile. Mm-hmm. But there are times when her testimony was just, I mean, it's so detailed, and it's like, if we have to go through every conversation she had with Travis Alexander, every phone call, every sexual act, I mean, we're going to be here forever. So, I can understand if somebody was sleeping. I think jurors were extremely attentive when she first took the stand, because she has sat mm-hmm. at the far side of the courtroom, on the far side of Jennifer Wilmot, one of her 2 defense attorneys. So now they have, you know, they're seeing her up close, and she's looking at them. But she did smile broadly one day last week when she tripped over her words. I posted that on Facebook because my page that I post from the courtroom, I post mm-hmm. things that the camera doesn't pick up. It's Beth Paris right. in Session. So check it out if you haven't. Anyway, I did not see anyone smile back. Mm-hmm. There are a few faces from the jury I couldn't see. They were obscured, but I didn't see anyone smile back. And she was smiling because she had tripped over her words, and they weren't, like, responding. No, they don't have questions yet. There's a wire basket on the rail in front of the jury where they put their notes when they have notes for a witness. And even during direct examination of some witnesses, they started putting notes in the basket even before cross. Because, you know, your questions might get asked on cross if they're not asked on direct. They don't have any questions yet for Jody. There was one where they asked her to speak up because she's so soft-spoken. Mm-hmm. You know, she's coming off as soft-spoken, gentle, frail, weak, small, whatever, all those things. Right. No. But she admits doing this. I mean, so mm-hmm. she admits this vicious act. So it's not like they're going to be scratching their head saying, yeah, but it's not like the juror's going to scratch their head saying, how could she do this? She's too little to have done this. No, she admits she did it.
So the defense continues questioning Jody tomorrow. Any idea when they might wrap up? Did you get a feel that they might be close to wrapping up?
Oh, God, I wish I could tell you yes, but no. They wrapped on on Wednesday with Valentine's Day 2007, right? So mm-hmm. she and Travis became official like a week before, 12 days before that, 2 weeks before that. So they're now going to be dating until June 29th, 2007. So I don't know if she's going to take us through every trip they took, and how she found out he was texting other women and they broke up. And then she moves to Mesa, and from the time they break up to the time she kills him, it's 11 months. So they mm-hmm. still have February 2007 to June 2008 to go through. So I think it's going to be 2 more days of direct.
At the very least. And this is an opinion question, and if you feel uncomfortable giving it, Beth, please don't. I don't mean to make you feel uncomfortable, but a lot of people respect your opinion so much, and they want to know how it's really going in the courtroom. As far as the witnesses for both sides so far, prosecution and then the defense witnesses, in your opinion, which ones have resonated the most with the jurors? Which ones have come across well so far?
You know, it's really, even if I could answer that, I don't know that it's hard to tell, because I don't know, you know, what jurors are thinking until we can talk to them at the end. I mean, I would have answered that question very differently in Casey Anthony, thinking, wow, you know, some witnesses were great, and then the jury acquitted her. Mm-hmm. So I really, I don't know, but the jurors' questions here in Arizona, which they didn't have the opportunity to do in Florida, can tell certain things. So, say, Travis Alexander's ex-girlfriend, Lisa Dadoni, her maiden name was Lisa Andrews when Travis liked her. He really carried a torch for her at the time he died. It wasn't Mimi Hall. It was Lisa Andrews. Mm-hmm. That's according to his friend. The jurors asked her questions at the end. Did you ever feel pressure from Travis to have sex with him? No, was her answer. Did he ever make you feel guilty for not having sex with him? No. Did he ever abuse you? No. Did he ever call you names? No. Because these are all things that Jody is now saying he did. I mean, she had sex with him, anal sex, even though she didn't want to. He did call her names. He abused her. All these things she says he did to her, he did not do to Lisa Andrews. Does that mean that Jody's lying, or does that mean he just treated Jody differently because she wasn't a good Mormon girl, like, you know, Lisa, the woman he wanted to be with? I don't know. But I thought their questions to her were very good, and they were probably very interested in her testimony since she was a recent girlfriend like Jody.
And, you know, Beth, that is, I think, very compelling testimony. You can't – the defense really can't do anything to counteract that because other than saying, well, it's because he treated Jody like a terrible woman – like a damaged woman. But I mean, I don't, that's not going to fly, in my opinion. We're talking with Beth Karras from CNN about the Jody Arias trial. Jody is on trial for brutally murdering Travis Alexander, slashing his throat, stabbing him, shooting him. And she claims she did it in self-defense. Of course, as a ex-prosecutor, former prosecutor, Beth, you've got to be almost salivating thinking about what the prosecution is going to ask Jody. Can you, I mean, just me, I'm not a prosecutor, and I would love to get up there and say, okay, why did you have a knife and a gun with you if you just went there just to, you know, have your fun? That would be my first question. Aren't you just dying to see what they're going to say?
Well, yes. I'm wondering if he's going to go in a chronological way or if he's going to jump around. I mean, we don't know what she says about the killing, all right, because she never admitted that to the police. She's obviously told her expert witnesses because they've come up with opinions based upon what she told them about the sequence of events in the bathroom. And that's what I really want to hear. And I'm sure the jurors, all of us, want to know what she says went down that day. Because the order of the fatal wounds is important. The defense, you know, made a big deal about it. You know, was it a shot to the head first and he wasn't unconscious and he came at her? Or was it the stab to the heart first, which the state says? So I really would want to cross her on that to see if her story differs from what the forensic evidence is. Because as I said at the beginning of the show, the blood in the bathroom tells a story. And you can tell a lot from the spatter and the drips and the smears and the order of things. And that's how the prosecution came up with its theory about the order of the fatal wounds. And we'll see if she says that it was different. I would really want to spend time on the bathroom.
I would love to see you cross-examine her. That I would pay to see that. Beth, CNN had a very interesting poll going on, and it was, what would you ask Jody Arias? Did you happen to read any of those questions?
No, but I participated. I had one of my own, but I did participate on air when we were taking some Facebook questions from people.
Well, what is your one question? And tell us some of the other questions that people are asking.
I would want to know why she put the camera in the washing machine and didn't get rid of it with the gun and the knife. And because I really think this would be a very different case without that camera. I don't know if she would even be charged with first-degree murder without that camera.
Interesting. And that's true. It's like, what was she thinking? Some of our people in our chat room are saying, well, you know, she thought that the washing machine would just destroy it and that'd be the best way. It would look more innocent that way, like she accidentally left it in there, never thinking that it could be retrieved. We do have a question from Nurse, one of our great moderators. Do you think the rebuttal case will be explosive considering Jody's testimony and what can now be brought in? Since Jody has brought up so much, can't the prosecution bring in all kinds of stuff to discredit her?
Well, I don't know that they will. This is an extremely skilled prosecutor, and he's streamlined his case. He will go after Jodi Arias, I'm sure, and her answers may stand alone. I mean, he may not relive her whole life with her and bring in people to say the opposite, because I don't know that that evidence is out there. A lot of things mm-hmm. she says may not be able to refute. It's just going to be a credibility issue. So I don't know what the rebuttal case will consist of. I mean, I think he's got a psychologist to rebut her expert witnesses, assuming everybody testifies. But I don't know if he'll end up calling any ex-boyfriends or something. I mean, maybe. I guess he could, theoretically.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see exactly what he does. Now, I have a question here from one of our members, and I'm a little confused here. Maybe I'm reading the question wrong. Was Travis's roommate in the house with the body, not realizing that Travis was there?
Oh, yes.
What's
he
going
had
on with
two
that?
Roommates. Oh, he had two roommates, Zach Billings, whom I spoke to, and Enrique Cortez. Okay, Travis died at 5:30 on June 4th. Mm-hmm. Enrique Cortez would work during the day and come home at 6 or 6:30 every night. So, yes, their body wasn't found till nighttime, like 10 o'clock at night on June 9th. They were in – Cortez was living in the house with the body, but the body was decomposing in the back master bathroom, and the door was locked. All right, so, I mean, the odor started permeating through the house, but they really didn't notice it till that fifth day. And he was in the shower stall, and he was washed off and all.
Right.
Zach Billings was in and out. He had been staying with his girlfriend and her parents and doing some house sitting. But on the day of the killing, I just read the police report again, Zach Billings was actually home between 3 and 4. So Jodi and Travis were probably in the bedroom. He never mentioned seeing them. And between 3 and 4, he left at 4, and he got home at 9. So she kills him at about 5:30 when Zach is out, and she's gone. I mean, she's gone before 9. She's gone by 6:30 because Cortez gets home around then. So
right.
She had to have gotten out of there very fast. But yes, they were in the house with the body.
Oh, see, I for some reason I had missed that point, and I was trying to comprehend this question. And I thought, well, no, he doesn't mean that the roommates were in the house for 5 days with the body. Aha. No, that's
yes.
exactly what happened. That is creepy. I mean, I don't think there's anything, that is creepy in the sense that they knew and didn't do anything. I don't think that's the case at all. They just didn't smell the odor.
They didn't smell the odor. And I asked Zach Billings. I said, Zach, come on. Please.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, I honestly, not till that last day, but I was at my girlfriend's a lot. And Enrique Cortez says, only that last day. They would keep to their bedrooms, and I don't know, because when the friends went in the house to look for him the night before he was supposed to go to Cancun with the very first witness who testified, Mimi Hall, they smelled the odor immediately. So everybody's
mm-hmm.
olfactory senses, I guess, are a little different, some more sensitive
yeah.
than others. But they didn't know, and they hadn't done their wash, or they would have found the camera and maybe thrown it out. Who knows? And Travis's car was in the garage, but they thought he was on a trip already. They thought he was gone already, and that it wasn't unusual for his car to be home, and he'd get a ride and to the airport or whatever, and so they thought he was already on a trip, so they didn't find it weird.
Oh, wow. That is a really freaky part of this case here. We have another question from Minor Fourth. Will Martinez try to bring in the fake letters to impeach Jodi's testimony about the masturbating / pedophile issue?
Okay, so the question came out a little bit.
Sorry.
I couldn't hear it too well. Will Martinez try to introduce the
fake letters to impeach Jodi's testimony about the masturbating pedophile issue?
I don't think so. I mean, those are letters the defense wanted to use, which the state says Jodi created, and set, and the state claims that Jodi created them, she forged them, she says they're Travis's. The defense says, no, these are Travis's, where he has these fantasies of little boys. The judge has said, they're not coming in. You don't even have originals. These are like photocopies or something. I don't know if Jodi Arias' testimony is somehow going to allude to them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to wait and see. I mean, she's not there yet. So I don't know that Martinez is going to use the letters. I think he fought to keep them out, and so far they're out of the case.
Okay, and we have so many people in our chat room tonight and so many questions, and I know you have to get going, Beth, because you have such a busy week in store for you. So tomorrow, Jody is back on the stand. They haven't even gotten to the day of the murder. So she's going to probably be on the stand for a couple more days at least. And then the prosecution will cross-examine. Are there going to be any more witnesses after Jody?
Well, you know, she supposedly has these two expert witnesses, a psychologist and an expert in domestic violence, who if they testify, are supposed to say the psychologist is going to say she suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, and the domestic violence expert will say, we think, battered women's syndrome. So their testimony will help explain why Jody reacted the way she did, because it was kind of overkill.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I know that there are some people who are, you know, advocates for domestic violence victims who feel this is a disservice to victims of real domestic violence.
Absolutely.
There are some who don't think that Jody Iris suffered anywhere near the same type of violence that other women do suffer. But we'll see. I mean, I would expect those two witnesses after Jody, at least at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jody's on the stand all week, I think, though, and maybe into next week.
Probably. I would think with the defense and then the prosecution coming back, and then the defense can re-cross-examine, right?
Redirect, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's why she's going to be on for a while. And mm-hmm. I don't know in all my years, I'm in 19 years at this job, if I've seen a defendant on the stand for so many days.
Really? Oh, that's going to be that. This is going to be an intense trial. And you're right. I think at times probably some jurors will get tired, but I bet they're going to perk right up once that prosecutor steps forward and asks all the questions that we're asking tonight. Beth Karas, give us the address of your Facebook site again. This is where you go and you post during the trial.
Yeah, I post throughout the trial at Beth Karas In Session, and In Session is all one word. So you'll find stuff there all day tomorrow.
And we will put that up on Web Sleuths as well, and I'll tweet it to everybody so everybody will have it. And we'll follow you every step of the way. Beth Karas,
great.
CNN, thank you so very much. We'll have you on our show again very, very soon. You are
great.
Absolutely one of our favorites, and thank you again for taking time out of your very busy day.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
You bet. Take care now.
Goodbye to everyone. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, I love listening to Beth Karas. I know that the audio was garbled in and out, people have been telling me. I don't know why that happens on Blog Talk Radio. I think sometimes when we have a ton of people listening like we do tonight, that might be a problem. But if you go back and listen to it, the garbling will more than likely not be there. So if you missed something tonight, you can always just click on the same link. This show will be up forever. As long as Blog Talk Radio is up, Trisha's True Crime Radio will be on, and all of the shows are right here for you to listen to. And Kimster, your thoughts on Beth Karas tonight?
Well, you know, she is like one of my favorite guests we've ever had. I'm always looking forward to having her on the show. She's always informative. She knows her stuff, and she's there for some pretty big cases. And it's so nice to be able to have her, because not only is she a reporter, but she's also been an attorney
mm-hmm.
right down there in the courtroom and knows all the ins and outs of the courtroom, too. So it's just such a treat to have her on the show again.
It is. And I love the fact that there's no drama with her. There's no bombshells and no ridiculous phrasing of things. There's no accusations. There's no twisted words. You get the facts. She explains them. It's like you're sitting there having coffee with her. You're talking with a girlfriend, and she's telling you what she saw. I love that about her. I could have her on every single week, but I won't bother her that much, although I will bother her to the point of annoying her if I have to get her back on here. So, but she's a good sport, and she loves Web Sleuths, loves the people, and loves to come on the show. So we'll keep our fingers crossed, and hopefully she'll be on again very, very soon. Okay, Kimster, we did not get to our cold case of the week last week, So we are pushing it forward to this week. Kimster, it's time now for the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case of the Week. The floor is yours.
Well, you know, I've been a kind of a brat to you lately because I keep stalling you. I know, but I keep stalling you before we get started. So first of all, I want to say that if you go in the private forum, there's some talk about websleuths.com being an emu-friendly environment, and there's a rumor that that's why we have so many new Australian members. So if you want to know more on that, go into the private forums of WebSleuths. Of course, you have to be a member, and we'll tell you about that later.
And
on
Kimster, Kimster, before you get to that serious note, I just want to say our Aussie friends are coming over in droves to WebSleuths. I love it. We're really picking up in Australia. We're very highly ranked in Australia. And so let's if you love Australia and you want to meet new Australian people, come to WebSleuths because that's the place to be. They're bringing a lot of their cases over to WebSleuths, and we love them. I've been to Australia once, and I'm telling you, they love Americans. One of the few places you can go outside of America where they do love Americans. Great people. I'm so glad that the Australians are finding WebSleuths, and do come on over, and you'll see what we're talking about. Okay, Kimster, now the floor is yours once again.
Thank you. Okay, on a more serious note, we have, and I'm telling you, this is some serious sleuthing, okay? I have a serious sleuthing tip from Sasquatch, all right? Sasquatch lives in the Northwest, where you know I live in the Northwest, where everybody knows Bigfoot's real, Sasquatch is real, and posting on websleuths.com. And in our resource center, Tricia, you know where our resource center is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does everybody else know where the resource center is? It's on WebSleuth. It says resource center. You see it on the index page. It's just got lots of information in there. Check it out. Anyway, in our resource center, Sasquatch has posted some really interesting information. You know how when you look at Google Map images or surveillance picture images and it's really blurry?
Yes.
Well, Sasquatch has posted a thread in the Resource Center about a free downloadable program called Smart Debluer that clears them right up for you. And not only that, but he has examples that show you what a great job it does. He gives a step-by-step directions. It is one of the best sleuthing tools I've ever seen out there.
Oh, wow.
So you guys, if you are a serious web sleuther, you need to put this tool in your toolbox.
And that's at the Web Sleuth Resource Center. If you go to websleuths.com/forums, there's a big box on the front of the forums page where I talk about the radio show. And at the very bottom of all of that, I have the link. It just says Web Sleuth Resource Center. You click on it, it'll take you right to it.
Exactly. All right.
Okay,
so
Kimster, I'm ready. Go for it.
Do, 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 do.
Yes, it's time.
Tricia, Wendy Kesh has a picture with her sister the day she disappeared. Family members took several pictures of Catherine Sojberg on June 5th, 1974. She was a junior at Oconomowoc High School, and it was prom night. She didn't just come home, and she didn't come home, Wendy said in her first TV interview 10 years after she went missing. Catherine went to a prom party in the country near Sullivan, and after an argument with her boyfriend, she walked away by herself from the Concord House, which is what the place was called. She was supposed to be spending the night at a girlfriend's house, so her didn't report her missing until the next day, but she was never seen again. Timothy Hack and Kelly Drew were both 19 years old, and they were dating, and they attended a wedding reception at a Concord Hall at a dance on 9th, 1980, the same place where Catherine vanished from, and they left saying they were meeting friends in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, 15 miles away. I don't think I said this is in Wisconsin, but this is all in Wisconsin. They never made it to their car. 2.5 months later, their remains were found about 9 miles from the dance hall. In 2009, DNA evidence led to the arrest of Edward Wayne Edwards in the murder of Timothy and Nancy. And due to similarities, many thought that he had a hand in Catherine's disappearance. So don't let that fool you, though, because, however, law enforcement has learned he wasn't in the state of Wisconsin when she died. Okay. So I needed to tell you guys that because that keeps being a rumor on the internet that he might have had something to do with Catherine. So anyway, please go www.websleuths.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Catherine along with the link to her thread, but only if you're a member of Web Sleuths. So please join today. And Tricia, how much does it cost to join websleuths.com?
Well, as we say in Utah, Kimster, oh my flippin' heck, it's absolutely free. We just need an email address. Do not believe the rumors that we want to look at your bank account, see how much you weigh, find out your blood type. No, no, no. We just want an email that we can contact you, and that's it. Everybody is important. Everybody's opinions matter. It will always be free to join at Web Sleuths. We are a community that is welcoming anybody who wants to come in, as long as you behave. So come on over and join us. Kimster, thank you very, very much. Next week, we have a very special show planned for you. I can't give you any details yet, but we're working on it. Trust me, you will love it. It'll be very good. Kimster, is there anything else you would like to add before we wrap up tonight?
No, I did want to repeat, though, that I know we had a lot of garbling in the studio tonight as far as the sound. Go ahead and download. After something like this happens, which it has happened a couple of other times, if you go back and download the show about 5 minutes after the end of the show, it will seem clear, or sound clear, I should say. So feel free to do that, everybody. And I can't wait to hear from you again next week.
It's going to be good. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. And Nurse Be Me, a special shout out to you for all of your help. Rain, Steely Dan, everybody there, thank you very, very much. I know I'm leaving about 90% of you out, and I do apologize. Just know that I love and appreciate all your hard work. Join us again next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, for Tricia's True Crime Radio. It's brought to you by Canines with a Cause, a nonprofit organization with the mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. Be sure to check out their website at Canines with a Cause. We'll see you next week at Tricia's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.